Welcome everybody. This afternoon we'll be walking through technical information regarding the Balkan regional tariff design, the bookends that we presented on September 24th, and providing some tools for participants to understand what the impact of various rate design options could mean for them. I'm going to go through a bit of an introduction, and Jordan will help me in going through kind of the logistics of how we're going to run today, and then I'll turn it over to LaRonda. But getting a bit more structured, I better introduce myself. I know that many of you are likely familiar with the faces that you're seeing up here on the Zoom session, but I'm Nicole LeBlanc, Director of Markets and Tariff. Jordan Ludwig is joining us again as a facilitator for this session. LaRonda Papworth will be taking us through the technical information through this afternoon, and Spencer Hall's joining us in supporting LaRonda with questions that she may want to tap in some support for. We're really, thank you for joining us today. We heard out of the last session that there was a need for some more information regarding the bookend rates and tools to evaluate the impacts of those rates. And so we look to fill that information gap here today. We think it's very important to us and important to you or to consumers that they have a good understanding around how the rate design can impact rates to them once they come into effect. And so we want to provide some information to help fill that gap. Today is going to really be about technical information and focusing in on answering technical questions, providing some analysis with data to evaluate the impact of the rate changes. And future sessions will get into the evaluation of the designs and the options. So as a start, I do want to note that we did load up a PowerPoint slide as well as an Excel workbook to the ISO's webpage for the session today. We didn't, with kind of the last minute add of this session, we didn't get a chance to send those in advance, but I will just kind of pause here and guide you to where they are. I think you likely will want to pull up the Excel workbook because we will be spending a bit of time in that later in the session. So if you go to the ISO's webpage, and I'll do it along with you to try and go at a pace that's reasonable. On the top bar at the right, there's the stakeholder engagement dropdown and ISO initiatives in the kind of middle of the page there, the place where you normally go to follow along with the material that we release for these sessions. Now my internet's having a hard time getting to that page. I've got a bit of a delay here. Once you get into ISO initiatives, going off of memory, I think if you scroll to the bottom of the page, the tariff topics are there, and there's the kind of the final link under rule standards and tariff consultation is the tariff and Balkan regional tariff design. Once in that section of the webpage, if you scroll down to near the bottom of the page, there's a list with the dates. And if you go to October 14th, 2020, technical information session and hit that drop down, it should open up and you'll see there materials which include tariff, bulk and regional impact hourly model, V1.0 and the presentation. Hopefully you guys followed along there and that was pretty slow. But if people are having a hard time, let us know, send in a Q&A, we'll send you the link. That would have been a faster way to do that. Adapting as we go here. So, sorry, back to the slides. As a general reminder, if you want to take us to the next slide, for those of you that have joined these sessions, you know that we are we do take audio recordings, sometimes video recordings, and through that we capture personal information. which we have to treat in a certain manner under the FOIP Act. And if you have concerns with how your personal information is going to get treated, please reach out to us. Next slide, please, slide three. We've added a disclaimer. This is not something that's in most of our presentations, but because there's technical analysis that's included in this one here, we just wanted to make sure that it was clear how this information is to be used by you and the disclaimers that we put around its use. We are well familiar, I think, with the ISO's operations with the COVID pandemic in place and our use of Zoom, and you'll continue to see us using Zoom probably for this whole Balkan regional engagement. And thank you for, hopefully it's effective for you. We're finding some great synergies in the use of Zoom here. So next slide, I'm gonna turn it over to Jordan to just take us through the logistics of how we're gonna use Zoom as a tool today.
Brilliant, thanks, Nicole. So I think just even reading the names, 80% of you have been through this before. If it's your first time, here's the way that the tool works. When you, everyone's going to be listening in mute off mode. And if you would like to get in the conversation, ask a question, you can do so by raising your hand or using the Q&A function at the bottom. We're going to get into more specifics about that. When we unmute your line, please lead with the organization that you work for and your first and last name. If you're using a device, you can look at the bottom in the tray for the Zoom tool app and you'll see a little hand that you can click on. Go ahead and click that now. Show me that you know how to use it. Rick's got it. I see Dan. Okay, Victoria. Yeah, Claudia, thank you. Awesome. So go ahead. You guys can all click that off. That's the best way to get my attention. Let me know that you've got a question that you wanted to ask for it at the point. You can also use the Q&A window. We'll be monitoring that. We'll see how the conversation actually emerges and goes. We like to bias our preference towards the actual audio interface. So if there's a clarification that's required or some context, we can have a bit of a back and forth in between that. So that's the best way to raise your hand. If you see a question there that you want to also upvote for it, there's a little thumbs up that you can tag to that as well. Usually we're responding to them quickly enough, so I'm not sure how frequently we'll use that functionality, but you guys determine that and you show us how you want to use it. So can we go to the next slide, please? So we went through many of this stuff already. Depending on if you're using a smartphone or a two-in-one or your computer, there's going to be that little tray where you can access for it how to actually raise your hand or type into the Q&A function. Can you go forward one more slide? So if you were dialing into this the traditional way through a telephone line, the way that you access and use the raise hand function is by hitting *9. That signals to us that you'd like to raise your hand just like everyone else. It's that raise hand function. We'll unmute you on our end, and then you'll still have to unmute yourself by hitting *6. And then you'll appear on the screen. We'll be able to start talking. At that point. So that's how to ask questions within the tool, within the app. Again, stakeholder participation. This one's even a little bit different today in that we're not necessarily having an evaluative conversation, but these principles are still going to hold and adhere to. But when we're presenting information, try and understand others' perspectives, disagree respectfully. I don't know how much disagreement we're going to have. We are going to balance their time fairly, but and make sure that you're getting your questions asked and answered and have an open mind. And just to reiterate again, this should be a bit more of an information session. So for those of you that have attended our sessions in the past, there's usually the clarification and making sure we're all on the same page. That's absolutely the emphasis today. The evaluation or the discussion of, that's not the purpose today. So we're going to take those comments. We're going to respectfully shut those conversations down and host those on the 22nd. You can move forward, please. And back over to you. Sorry, we'll go through the agenda real quickly. So we're almost through the introduction. Then we're just into group discussion where we're going to go through what the technical details of the rate bookends are. There is some further case studies, further rate information on what those sample load shapes look like and a calculation of an invoice under those rate bookends indication towards that at least. And I know Laurent is going to be also walking you through a rate impact tool that you'll be able to use for yourself an answer. How does this impact me? What are the ways that this could impact me going forward? Nicole, anything you want to mention or flavor onto the agenda before we talk about who's in the room?
Yeah, I think I do want to share a few comments around kind of really the, we had a very effective discussion on the September 24th around the objectives that the ISO is laying out for the Balkan regional rate design and our starting points, our bookends that we wanted to kind of put out as anchors to guide the conversation going forward. But coming out of that meeting and even kind of through some of the questions in the technical component, it did become clear to us that there was still a remaining gap and a remaining information gap that was important for us to fill. And that information gap really gets around making sure that consumers understand how they can evaluate what the rate changes would mean to them in their costs. We put out the cost impact analysis in September 24th, kind of in those buckets of high, medium, and low responders, with really the intent of providing information so that it was clearly transparent that we knew that the bookends that we had developed would have an impact to consumers in a different way. To start to kind of put that information out there as a starting point for the discussion of, okay, and with those impacts, how do we have to move forward in the rate design to achieve all three of our objectives? There's the cost responsibility and efficient price signals is two important ones that's guiding our rate design, but a path of minimal disruption is equally important to us. And putting out that rate impact analysis really indicated, well, who will be adversely impacted by this change? And how do we go forward in our design and our engagement in addressing those impacts to ensure we get to a path of minimal disruption? And in order to do that effectively, I think we heard quite clearly that those consumers needed more information, and we're looking to fill that gap today with data, with tools, with better understandings around kind of what the implications of the rate design are and how you might be able to go back and look at your own data and look at your own operations and then assess, well, what are the implications to me under the bookends that have been identified, but then also keeping our objectives in mind, also then come up with modifications or mitigation to bring forward into the next stages of the engagement to kind of continue this discussion of, well, how can we take steps forward to achieve our objectives of cost responsibility and efficient price signals in a minimally disruptive way for all consumers. And so we're really, that's the gap we're looking to fill here today. How can we help you have tools, data, and information to be able to do those evaluations for the next stages of our engagement? We just need to reiterate that those bookends that we released are starting points, and the cost impact information that we released was to be clearly transparent, that we knew that those bookends would have implications that we need to address as we go forward with either modification to the design or mitigation. This evolution is going to take a bit of time. We're going through our engagement now until the end of the year, then we'll move into a regulatory process, and the rates that we're talking about through this process, they likely won't apply until 2023 or 2024, knowing kind of the regulatory schedule. So a bit of time for everyone to adjust and get ready for it, but a lot of work in the next several months for us to go forward with that. So that's a lengthy introduction. I think the next few slides, we're gonna fly right through them. There are a lot of people on the call today, and we're targeting really filling information gaps. And as Jordan mentioned, we'll be looking to kind of have that kind of factual clarifying question discussion today, and we'll focus our evaluations for future conversations. And if we can keep rolling through the slides, I think I'll highlight on the stakeholder engagement framework slide that hopefully you see this as a sign of the ISO listening and adapting. We heard that there was a gap. We're looking to fill it as efficiently as we can. We appreciate you coming in today, joining us with maybe less notice than what we standardly would provide, and hopefully the tools that we've provided up on the webpage will allow you to be engaged today. The next couple slides lay out the engagement process that we went through in quite a bit of extensive detail on the 24th, and I'm not gonna talk through them. I think the only comment that I'd make is that we're adding this information session to try and ensure that the engagement continues to be effective as we go forward, so that when we hit into our October 22nd session and later into December and January, we're speaking from kind of similar pages of information and knowledge. Switch into the next slide, focusing in on today. I think I touched on this a lot, but really it's about helping build a shared understanding of the bookends and the tools in which you can evaluate them with. So I think I can leave it, turn it back over to you, Jordan, unless there's something you think I needed to further reinforce or add. No,
I think that's very clear. Thank you for taking the time to give that perspective. And I'm going to pass it over to LaRonda to start actually going through a bit of the presentation.
All right. Good afternoon. We heard a bit after September 24th about, am I in the heavy responder? Am I in the medium? What grouping do you have me in there? And so we want to walk you through how you could determine that or understand better and be more familiar with that type of an assessment. And so, you know, I learned something just as much as everyone else. And when I look at one of ISO's bills to one of ISO Connect Transmission Connected customers, I didn't realize that bulk and regional is not split out. It says there that one connection charge, and that is the full on bulk, regional, and pod charges all combined in one cell or one spot on your PDF bill. So that doesn't help you. So then as well, you'll get a CSV file. And I've just kind of done a snapshot of a sample CSV file, and the cells that I'd want you to focus on would be your billing capacity cell, as well as either your actual coincident meter demand, ACMD, or your TCMD, which is your tariff coincident meter demand. Likely they are the same. In very extremely rare instances, I don't actually know of any where they'd be different. Now, this is for transmission connected customers, those that aren't rate 65 or D whatever for ATCO. So for customers like that, I'm not exactly sure, but I think what's more powerful is the tool we're going to provide today. You put your hourly load shape in there and it'll tell you exactly what kind of a responder you are to 12CP pricing signal. And if you don't have access to your hourly data, I think your DFO should help you. And if that isn't working, definitely talk to us and we'll see what we can do to walk you through this understanding, because I really do think it's important. And you know, as the tariff modernization that Nicole walked through, we really want the tariff to be easy to understand, and complexity for no reason or hidden behind layers isn't helpful for our pricing signal. So we want to be helpful in that regards. We'll talk a little bit more about that factor, that heavy, medium, low response. I just wanted to highlight for a current bill, a couple of places you can look for further information. I also thought I'd just throw up some slides because they do kind of come into play when we look at the model, that how we calculate the bulk system charge today. And these are just little clippings from our 2020 ISO tariff update, our rates calculation spreadsheet that we file with every tariff update. So then we would also look at and then the next slide is the regional costs, how those are calculated. So I just wanted to kind of help you understand where to get to, how in final, what rate calculations would look like. We do a little mini mock-up in the model, and it'd probably be helpful to be able to link those two. So I just want to see if there's any questions about current 12CP before we move on to the bookend analysis.
Doesn't look like a question through the Q&A, but there is a comment from Raj saying any waiver would reduce ACMD to TCMD.
Okay.
Any other questions come up? I'm not seeing any hands or things hit the Q&A.
Lorinda, where would someone go to find, or how would they get a hold of their CSD file? Or that file with the data that you referred to in that previous slide?
Every market participant that gets a bill like this from the ISO gets a CSV file along with that. The DFO Direct Connect customers, those I'm not exactly sure, but there's definitely ways that they should be able to get the data from the DFO, like exactly the CSV file.
Thanks.
There's okay. Another request come in from Paula asking if you could slow down a little bit on how we're actually proceeding through the content. So we'll take that under advisement. A follow-up question from Paula. How does energy storage fit currently?
Well, currently the existing ISO tariff charges for rate DTS and rate STS would apply to an energy storage site. So if, let's say there's a transmission connected energy storage site, that had got a Section 101 waiver from the DFO, considering they'd be also supplying, maybe they don't need it, but they would provide, they would get exactly this bill, and their 15-minute data would flow into the ISO, and we'd calculate all those values in that CSV file exactly as you would any other customer that has rate DTS and rate STS.
Maybe going on to the next section, Lorinda, the reason you're kind of going towards this data is because this is the data that you think a customer would want to have access to be able to kind of load into the tool that you're going to walk through later to understand the implications to them.
Yeah, since so much of our analysis going forward will be based on change from this current ISO tariff billing. As we know that we're looking at the impact of bulk charge recovery through the 12CP mechanism, it's very difficult to have a conversation, a bill impact analysis or a future tariff design, unless we have to understand today's billing and the impacts. And once we move over to the model, we can look at some tools to sort of understand better the 12CP impact on various case studies. And we could take some time there to just make sure that we all have that a good common understanding of the 12CP. I'm going to move, no more questions, to the bookends A and B case studies. So on September 24th, we presented some estimates of what rates would look like under bookend A and bookend B. And just to talk through it one more time, under bookend A, which we called or represented as a fixed charge type of tariff design, that all network costs would be recovered through a billing capacity type charge. And that charge would be around $9,700 per megawatt. And you'll see this over and over in the model. And in the bookend B, we would look at separating total network costs into interregional or between region costs of facilities involved in moving power between regions. And then looking at intra-regional, so the cost of the lines that are within region to move power within a region, those would be recovered under billing capacity, which we estimated at about $3,100 a megawatt. And the inter-regional cost recovered from a CP type charge, but it would be looking at, we're just going to call it 120 CP, just so it's a little bit more shorthand, but it's looking at weekday peaks for summer and winter months. And that's approximately 120 hours. No CP charge in months that are outside of the summer and winter. And it'll be clear when we go over to the model. And that charge would be approximately $1,000 a megawatt.
So I know we're working through the slides pretty quickly right now. this session only works if we're actually providing information and answering questions that are outstanding and gaps in information for it. So yes, we're building out. Here's how you can find the information. Maybe let's ask the question a different way. Is anyone unclear right now, either how to access that information that LaRonda went through, where that file is, or what's actually in place here? Like, let's tease out if there is anything that's remaining as an uncertain here. So everyone has perfect information on this stuff already, which is fantastic if we can make that assumption.
Well, I think it'll be exciting to go through some case studies too. So we'll find the gaps if there's any gaps. This is another slide that we presented in September 24th, where we introduced this concept of looking at the impact, looking at a group of stakeholders or customers that would be heavily impacted by a change to bookend A or bookend B. And you look at one characteristic of those are that they're heavy 12CP responders through a variety of reasons. And I'll go through that in just the next slide. They do not pay a large amount of the bulk charge. And we call them heavy 12CP responders. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more. We also represented the medium 12CP responders, and I'll talk again about them, and all other customers, which we are going to classify as low responders now. It just was a little bit of a further understanding. And so as Nicole mentioned earlier, we want to put this out there to be transparent that there is impact, and we want to look at that impact under the objective of our five objectives, and one of them being minimal disruption. So what steps can be done given these starting points, bookend A and bookend B, to get to the right solution, that solution that achieves the best balance of objectives. So I think what I'm going to talk about next is just a sort of a further on conversation from this slide. I see there's a question. I'm going to answer it. Okay. So it's approximately 120 hours in a season year. So if you were to look at, because the workbook is done June 1st to May 31st, that's approximately 120 hours of weekday peaks in 3 summer months and 3 winter months equals about, I think it's 125 or 126.
Okay.
Top hour per day.
We've got two questions with their hands up. Let's start with Paul, and then we'll go to Surendra. And Richard, please either type in or let us know if that answers your question specifically.
Hi there. Just a quick question. Can you just let me know what industries are the heavy 12CP compared to the medium? Is it all centered in one industry, or is it spread across multiple sectors?
I'll cover it in the next slide, if that's okay. Great.
Okay, let's go Surendra then.
Okay, you can hear me now, right, Jordan?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, no, I would just a comment that Rhonda, rather than saying 3 winter, 3 summer month, can we just say what are those 6 month are so that we just put to the bed?
Sure.
Yeah.
It is December, January, February for winter months, and June, July, August for summer months.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay. And one clarification from Richard saying, so what I heard is it is effectively one peak hour per day. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Excellent.
Per weekday.
A follow-up, Vittoria asking now, can you let us know if those top 120 hours are set in advance?
The concept of bookend B is no. It's as 12CP is, it's not known in advance. After the finish of the season, or I guess every weekday, you could determine what day, what hour that peak was.
So you won't know until it's done is what I'm hearing then, Miranda.
But yeah, you, again, it's, again, because it's meter data and not real-time data, it would have to be after the billing data arrives. So in the same timing as the 12CP, which is after we have initial settlement and then it goes through to final settlement, that interval or that hour would be determined and locked in.
Okay. And I've got Erica and Jeff asking interregional or provincial demands. And in comparison, Jeff's asking if it's really a daily rent regional / interregional peak.
The concept of bookend B was at time of region peak. So it's not in, if you add up all the sites in, let's say, the Northwest, add up their hourly profile and find the peak, that would be the hour in which your coincident peak charge would occur.
So no I, just a DRP, daily regional peak. It already has an acronym. But to, again, reiterate, this is our starting point bookend. And on the 22nd, we're hoping to hear about kind of other options that may continue to achieve the objectives, but in a way that you feel might be better. Sorry if that's not getting into facts. You're going to have to...
Hey, that sounds like that's evaluation of stuff, Nicole. Why don't we move forward? We can answer, come back to Paul's question about the industries. And Paula, if you have more clarification after Laurent has presented, please throw your hand back up. We'll unmute you again.
To talk a little bit more about how we characterize these heavy, medium, and low responders, as we talked about before, that if you could compare your billing capacity charge versus your tariff coincident meter demand charge, and if your total coincident meter demand charge is less than 20%, or you're avoiding more than 80% of your billing capacity megawatts, then you would be a heavy responder. And what we saw in that group of heavy 12CP responders, there was ISDs, so these are sites that have generation installed and use the grid for backup or insurance or standby. There's DFO substations with DCG connected there, and you would see a response from the generation in order to maximize their DCG credits. And there's price responsive loads. Those are loads that are willing to adjust their load consumption behavior in order to minimize their transmission costs. So that's pretty much the three groups in that heavy 12CP responders. As far as industries, whether they're oil, gas, forestry, it's a mix, right, of what we see in Alberta. There's forestry, there's chemical, there's oil sands, there's oil. So a big mix. And that same group that I talked about, ISD, DCGs, and price responsive load, exists in the medium 12CP responders too. These are ones that aren't around the 80 to 100% avoidance. They're more like 60 to just below 80%. And for whatever reason, their type of their requirements, they're not actively or not, they don't have the ability to avoid 11, 12 months of the coincident meter demand charge. And so you'll see there, they'll be a TCMD charge on their file, a tariff coincident meter demand megawatt amount. As far as low 12CP responders, all other customers, well, this leaves a lot of sites. There's residential, commercial, small industrial. They can be small sites, small industrial sites alone with no generation or just very little generation. They can be large city substations. It can be rural. It's a real big mix. And these ones, it's really not possible for a site to have a 0% or have 100% matching, just because of, unless you're a super large customer that is load shape exactly matches the system demand. So what you see is a low response. So 0 to 60%, but likely the lowest number is 20% from what I could see. So this hopefully gives you some flavor behind what those groups are. But I think what'll be more interesting is watching our case studies or a site by site and the impact from bookend A and bookend B. Because you really learn a lot about how 12CP is impacting them or how they're responding to 12CP, and then see how something like a 120CP would work with their load profile.
LaRonda, is it safe to assume when you're walking through the profiles and the fact that some of these sites are avoiding 80 to 100%, I get the impression that it sounds like if you're trying to avoid and have the sophistication and the ability to avoid, then you're probably actively managing to that as an indicator. Is that a fair assumption to maybe have for people if they're thinking about this on a shorthand basis?
Right. If you're trying to avoid, you likely are. And, you know, you could be from 60 to 100% somewhere in there for sure. It all, again, depends on the type of load connected there and the type of generation and the amount of generation, where you get those sort of between 60% and 95% avoidance of bulk system charges.
Okay. So, Paula, I'd ask if that answers your question. I think it's pretty... pretty good response from LaRonda on my side. We'll get to Tori in a second. I also see a comment from Raj, which does seem like it's more of a comment or a clarification that if there's price responsive loads that also have on-site generation, it could either be a load reduction or a generation kick-in that's also leading to that response, which again, we'll take that as a clarification. Tori, I saw your hand up briefly. Are you wanting to get involved? He says, no, he's fat fingered for it. All right. So we'll go ahead and we'll continue to progress then, LaRonda.
Okay. So I've got five case studies. These case studies are illustrative. They're, of course, based on some real load shapes, but nothing in there that could signify, you know, who and exactly the load shape. Use some artistic license to meld some shapes together to be representative. We want these five case studies to be able to show, you know, some of the myriad of impacts of bookend A and bookend B. So they're representative, and this tool you can take away, take back to your shop, put in your own hourly load shape, and have analysis very quickly of the impact on your site. But these case studies should be helpful if you're looking at our October 22nd session and you want to, you know, throw in some five case studies to see the impact on them with your tariff design. That could be pretty helpful. So our results for the bookends in B were maybe modified. And so we'll have a little bit of discussion at the end of today about that. And I just want to point out that we provide generalizations. We group these heavy 12CP responders. Well, not one of those is exactly like another. So when you group them together, you lose some of that fine detail that helps you understand the impact. So by going site by site, you can kind of see the uniqueness of their profiles that result in unique impacts. So as important as generalizations, when we calculate the rates, it's going to be based on a big old sum of megawatts or megawatt hours. But it really is valuable for all of us to look at these hour load profiles and see the nuances that result in really interesting impacts, from my regards anyhow, and I hope you see that too.
One quick question through the Q&A from Paula, asking if we could please provide a list of acronyms. And Carla, you mentioned that you'd like to answer that question live. So maybe we'll respond to that, LaRonda and Nicole, but also when we're presenting, maybe we can speak through the acronyms for it. We'll actually give the full description kind of moving forward for it. LaRonda, is that a request that you think that we can adhere to?
Yes. I'll try not to use acronyms. I'll trip over the words enough times, but I'll try not to.
That's good. We're all in this together.
Eventually, they just become English words, I guess. I don't know. Your brain doesn't pick up that you're saying an acronym.
So the ones that looks like they're in the slides, there was ISD, Industrial System Designation, so kind of a site that has that specific designation that allows it to have behind the fence generation and different treatment, and then DCG, distribution connected generation, those appear to be the two that are listed, and CP, coincident peak.
Okay, let's look at some of these case studies. So our first case study is a site located in the Northwest. It's a 100 megawatts maximum load with a 55% load factor. So load factor is the relationship between your maximum demand and your energy. Alberta has an 80% wide load factor, very industrially. To just some jurisdictions are around 40% when they have a really heavy peaking nighttime load or air conditioning load. So 55%, the reason why, we'll go through it. There's generation there, so it can adjust its load using their self-generation at their site. This site is a heavy 12CP responder, between 87 and 95% of bulk system charge avoidance based on our formula. It's a price responsive load, so they're really looking to ensure that they reduce and minimize their transmission costs as much as they possibly can. Likely a heavy in electricity intensive load. Case study two is a site located in the Northeast. Maximum demand is 20 megawatts with a 5% load factor. So this is clear that the site rarely uses capacity from the grid and likely uses the grid as backup when their generation is down or for any other issues they might have on the site. This results in a 90 to 97% 12CP coincident peak response. And it's more passive, it's not active. They don't use the grid except for emergency or in times where they plan to plan maintenance on their generation or a forced outage. And it's a standby load. Then we'll have another study in the Northwest, another price responsive load with a little bit lower of a 12 coincident peak response and a higher load factor. Our case study four, we've located in the central region. Its maximum load at times is 10 megawatts with a 10% load factor. And this is another heavy 12 coincident peak bulk charge responder at about 85%. And this is a DFO substation with distributed connected generation, or a distribution facility owner substation with DCG. Like I said, I'm trying to pick representative sites from each of those three categories that we showed you in that first slide in September 24th. Our last case study is a big mix of residential, commercial, and small industrial in the Edmonton region with a fairly high load factor of 60% and a maximum demand of 45 megawatts. This is a low 12CP responder at about 23%, and from what I can see, that's a very low number. It might be the lowest you can go. Again, depending on your size and how you align with the system demand profile. So I'm going to, if there's any questions about the case studies, or if we can continue on to the results.
Is anyone unclear what some of the numbers or acronyms are here? I know, Rhonda, I think you did a good job walking through them, but want to test to make sure, because this is pretty foundational. You can hear Rhonda's dog contributing to the conversation too with a subtle snort here and there.
She's in nudging distance, but it's not working. Okay, there. Got it stopped. Okay. So I'm going to take you over to our model where I can calculate these numbers and show you how to calculate them and recreate them. But when we look at our five case studies, we can see that the number one and number three were our price responsive loads. And you, yes. See, I got to go back a second. I'm going to need a cheat sheet on these two. Yeah, one and three are our price responsive loads in the Northwest. And under bookend A, we have, between 80 and 130% increase from today's bulk and regional charges. Oh, I should also point out, this is just bulk and regional. in the analysis that we presented earlier on the slide, that's the full DTS bill, including pod charges. I didn't want to break the model by putting pod charges in there so that we could do a real percentage increase on your DTS. We just try to, let's just focus in on Vulcan Regional for now on this tool. And under case study two, which was our standby load, we see a very large change in the under bookend A with a very small change under bookend B, and we can walk through why that would be. And then our DCG, or our distributed connected generation at a DFO substation number four, has a fairly interesting result where it's a large impact under bookend A and a reduction under bookend B. And as we expected, the low 12CP responder has a rate reduction under both bookend A and bookend B. Okay, let's get to the tool. So I got to stop sharing. So this will take a few minutes. Bear with me. Hopefully I don't.
No, not that button. Teasing a little bit.
Okay. Is everything okay? Can you see a bright yellow box? Go towards the bright yellow box.
Okay.
And I'm using my bigger screen, which is over here. It's not like I'm ignoring you. In fact, you can turn off my video if you want, if it's too frustrating to look at the side of my head. Okay. I'm going to get a little drink of water. And please ask questions so I don't talk.
And now is a good time to go back to the ISO webpage. I won't take you through that very long drawn out to get there, but you should be able to pull this tool up and follow along on your second monitor at home.
And both Paula and Claudia provided a link in the Q&A if you look in under answered, so you can find that link directly.
I think it was Vittoria and Claudia, just to make sure we're giving proper kudos out.
Okay, so we have an Excel model with seven tabs. The first tab, file details, tells you a little bit about each tab. We got our disclaimer. We're trying to provide tools that give you an analytical representation. You know, this is really early. We want this tool out there. And as you can see, we named it version 1.0. We fully expect a version 1.1 and 2. As we finesse it, or if any errors or errors are found, please let us know. We're not representing that it is error-free, but hopefully it's helpful. And again, the case studies are representative only. They're to illustrate the impact, not to be held up as an actual impact on a site. So I'm going to, I will just move on from my little descriptor of what each tab is. But I'll start at the back end here under sample load. Here's our 2 years of hourly data for our five case studies. You don't have to go to this tab if you don't want to. The data is here. If you want to add yours, feel absolutely free to do so. Add any ones that you could represent in there and make up and see what the impact is. Borrow these case studies, tweak them a little bit and see what the impact is. But this tab is there for you. I'll just answer Paula's question here. This is only a snapshot in time. The other tool that we rolled out in March will do a dollar per megawatt hour, or it'll do an impact on your bill based on coincident factors over time. And we're working on updating that. It's not ready yet. And it will takes a bit more time to get a final tariff design into it. This is a tool for just assessing a snapshot in time bill impact. Regional load, we've provided this tab regional load in blue. We've provided hourly load by each region, Northwest, Northeast, Central, Edmonton, Calgary, and South. You don't have to go to this tab at all. It's here though. My fancy Excel moves through them. You don't have to do it yourself, but it's here. The big powerhouse file is this hourly data. Now, I'll just walk you through, not bore you to death, but just to make sure we got all the questions and that we understand what's going on in this spreadsheet. We have the date, and it starts in June 1st and goes to May 31st, 2020, so 2 years. We've wanted to use like a season year so that we can capture that December, January, February, remove the calendar year impact. So the analysis is all done by season year. The calendar year, the month, the date, I'm just working across. Column F is the week. And then there's the weekday in column G and the hour ending in H. So you'll have 24 hours and then that one day a year, 24 hours. The season I could have removed that, just ignore that for now. What we have here is a system load, hourly load. And I have provided, I had to do some little quick and dirty things to so this file wouldn't break when we sent it out or had other people use it. So we have hard coded in the hour of 12 CP for this time period. So there'll be 24 values in this cell that are marked as the 12 CP hour. The system demand, again, this is a may not exactly match the calculation of the 12 CP, as that is a 15-minute interval calculation that I didn't even want to mimic in this model. So it's here. If you want to, should be very close, but could have error, and just relating to 15 minutes. And then the 12 CP is marked. And if you, I'm not going to do it, but you can filter for values greater than zero and find the 12 CP. If I do that, it takes about 15 minutes, it seems to. Yeah, I was also going to say, if you've got those, you know, those, the PhDs in Excels that want to help make models better, feel free to talk to me and see if there's some efficiencies we can gain in model designing, never mind tariff designing. So what this column will do was grab the sample load. So the sample load is the case study from the orange column from the orange tab. So column M comes from the orange tab sample load. And the region load, the blue, comes from the regional load. But here, what it'll do is grab the load at the time, the load in the sample column at the time of 12 CP and use it for our calculations. For at time of region,
I might have missed it. How do you choose which case?
I haven't showed you that yet.
Okay, I'll wait.
There's a cheat. So it goes and grabs the load for that hour. So if you sum this up, you would get your full megawatts that you would charge your bulk 12 CP bulk charge. Over here on region 120 CP, it's finding the weekday peak in the summer and winter months and grabbing the load for the peak load for that day. And so you can see it grabbed 85.8 because that is the regional peak load hour for this region and brings it over here. So this would be a potentially a billing charge for this day added up for the full month of June for each hour. And all this does is go and calculate the maximum regional load for this day. In here, it's got, if it's the right month, if it's got the right weekday in here, it's a weekday and not a weekend. Didn't get all fancy on holidays or weekdays. That's, you know, finessing. The other thing we grab is instead of introducing the concept of contract capacity for these illustrative examples, I'm just using the maximum demand for their contract or for their billing capacity. If you have your own particular site, you can override that. So all this file does is goes and grabs your sample load at hours of significance. Either however you want to make that significance, if it's 12 CP or 120 CP or anything else you would like to design, it can go and grab the load of your sample site for that hour of significance.
Let's pause here, LaRonda. Show of hands if you're tracking so far.
Well, I think I'm not done either. What if they're not tracking? These guys are not tracking or tracking?
These guys are tracking. So, and only 5 people participated for it. So we're at about a 10% adoption rate, which maybe we should only expect about 40%. So we can round that up to 25, but all right. Seeing some participate. There's a question that came up now, Paula, in the written portion. We can go hands down now as well. Where does the information for the regional load come from?
Since it's all historical, we have queried our databases and pulled all metered load by region, by hour, and put it in this file for you. Okay. If we got more questions after...
Another question just on if this is published by the ISO, and this tool is up on the web, as Nicole and LaRonda have both mentioned, so you can go and download it right now. Nicholas, I see that your hand's still up. Are you wanting to participate? We can get Nicholas unmuted unless he throws his hand down. Nicholas, can you unmute on your end too? Oh, so it looks like a no now, so we can get his hand down. And Paula, do you want to come unmute and we can get your question answered live?
Yeah, I was just wondering on the, because we have the information on an hourly basis for the entire Alberta system, but the regional data, is that available live or would that be available live so we could pull historical for the region, or how do we get that? I know you provided it in the spreadsheet, but how do you go into the ISO website and get that data?
At this point, it's not publicly available. We've provided this 2 years of history here in this tool. Okay. And then should the rate designs be dependent on that regional information, we'd be looking at ways to make that information more accessible and available so that people can have what they need to actually respond to what we're relying on to drive rates.
And similar to the voting lines, do we have any large loads that are right on the boundaries between these regions, that, or is there big geographic gaps between these regions? Is there any gerrymandering that could happen here?
Yes, not with any intent in mind, though.
No, but you know, if one was to slip to one side versus another side, would that make a big impact for some of the loads?
Well, I know the northeast boundary with Edmonton sometimes can be a little fuzzy with Fort Saskatchewan.
Okay.
They're fairly close to the same size. So, you know, would a big load moving change the date and hour of, or the hour of peak? It could.
Okay.
Depending on its size, of course.
Be interesting just to see the sensitivity of that. Mm-hmm. How that moves it through, or maybe it's shared between both regions.
Richard, I'm doing my best to read your question, but I can't follow on that. Do you want to take a second try? Maybe while he's typing, we can ask it. So everyone's tracking so far. Is there anyone that needs us to take a step backwards or work through some previous comments, content? We'll also go to Nicholas's question. Historical data for regional peaks is pertinent to evaluating these bookends. More of a comment or a statement.
Right. We provided 2 years of historical data. If you need, if we need more, we can look at that for sure.
I think Richard's comment gets more into an evaluation of the use of regional peaks.
Yeah.
That is worth getting into, along with kind of where Paula was going around, how effective can it be? And that's probably worth getting into on October 22nd. No, and Richard questions. Must have fat fingers too.
All right. Not seeing any other questions to slow down or park. So my assumption again is that, yeah, there he goes. He's got fat fingers for it. So yeah, we'll take that under advisement. We'll have that type of a conversation at the 22nd if that's something that we're hearing more broadly. Let's make the assumption now that everyone is still tracking, following, and knows how they might be able to use the tool or how you're orienting them to it right now, Aranda, and we'll continue.
Okay. One tab is just a really easy way to pull the results after you identify the hour of significance and pull the megawatts. You can just sum them up here and I can get all the values I need to calculate the rates. You don't have to spend any time on this tab at all. It should, unless you're going to change something wildly. There's also a graph table, but I'm going to talk a graph tab, but I'm going to move on to rate calculations and come back because I already have case study one loaded up in here. So I'll just go over to the graph once we get set.
We do have Surendro with the question as well. Can we get Surendro unmuted?
Yeah. Lorna, could you go your hourly data they were using that peak? Yeah. So it's very interesting. Well, there are two interesting observations. First, you were there when you're saying hour 23, where the peak happened in that first, yeah, here. And then I scroll down further on the same column, like the spreadsheet you provided. And yeah, here you go. It looked to me whenever this load is at highest peak, the system peak is happening same time.
Yeah.
So if this load is there, they pay for the highest peak. If they're not there, there's no peak. So if this load were to manage the CP, how would they manage? Because they are there. When they're there, there's a peak. And when they're not there, there's no peak.
Yeah, when you're talking 100 megawatts from 800, that's a very large portion.
So how would you treat, how would this load in this region, for example, have any way to manage? If it was in other region, he could have managed, but he can't. And how does it work for this load?
Well, I think it doesn't. Just this bookend B for a site like this in this region, we can't minimize the disruption without adding modifications. But I just want to take it back to our objectives, right? Like the whole point of the regional price signal was to align planning signal with pricing signal. So it's very valuable to reduce load in a region at the time of that region's stress. So that was the objective of that efficient pricing signal, to look at using a regional peak. Now it's a trade-off. What you're seeing here and minimize disruption, that for this site, there's nothing here for them to minimize their costs.
But it just goes totally what Lorenda, remember you said that 12 CP had some deficiency. And one of the reason you guys used why 12 CP didn't work in month of March, April or May, because the system is pretty flat. There's no point of any response. But now in this example, you want this load to respond at hour 23, right? Because to lower the system peak of the region, like how does it any better in that principle when 12 CP was not good in the month of April or May?
So yeah. Surrender, I think we're getting close towards the evaluation on some of the stuff. I like the way that you'd positioned it before too, which is how could they manage in this scenario? And I think Laronda's answer is pretty accurate. In this case, this site looks like they're more related to what the regional peak is going to be, and they're probably their bill is going to reflect that impact. Is what I'm hearing most loud and clear. Any other questions for clarification? You're looking for that, and then we'll get to Colette's question, and then to Dan.
No, I'm good, Jordan. I was just pointing out that how even the example Ron is showing, how irrelevant this method is.
Okay, thank you. Let's get Colette unmuted. Hi, Colette.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I just wanted to maybe just follow up on Surendra's point and just share my observation of the Northwest region. I've done a little bit of analysis on it. I found there are four price responsive loads in the Northwest region that comprise of about 25% of the actual load in the region. So there is no ability for any of those loads to manage their transmission costs through the bookend B rate design. And so I see that as, you know, being a flaw, I guess, in this particular tariff design. And what I'm struggling with, and maybe we can come back to it at some point, but I see where you would want to send a price signal to reduce the regional load to optimize the regional assets that need to be invested in a certain region. But I can't see any connection between the billing determinants and the bulk system, which are the major transmission components in the province. I'm failing to see a link between the tariff design and the cost of those particular assets. So just some observations. Thanks.
I want to pick up on that and bring to Dan's question as well. Colette, maybe if you're still unmuted, if you can let me know if this actually aligns with where your head was at. Dan's asked if you can please reiterate the rationale for aggregating the load at the regional level rather than the system level. I think that's a question akin to what you're asking. Is that a fair characterization?
Yes, absolutely. Because I see the price signal that you want to send to minimize the regional infrastructure. And that's typically what the capacity charge does based on billing capacity or anytime peak, which we're seeing here that is exactly what the regional, like the intra and interregional charges being based on here. It's your anytime peak. So I don't see the connection between the second rate component and the bulk system, which is the HVDC lines, the SATR, the Fort McMurray, like all those big transmission elements. I do not see how there's any cost causation link between the cost of those facilities and what is being proposed in either of these tariffs.
Okay, so we're getting pretty close to flirting with that evaluation line. I do want to take a quick second, LaRonda and Nicole, if you could respond to the way that Dan had asked the question on reiterating the rationale for aggregating load at the regional level rather than the system level, but more just from an understanding perspective. We can evaluate and discuss the merits of that approach later, but just the thinking and what went into it originally.
You want me to go give it a crack, LaRonda?
All right, I have my microphone turned off.
So I think the premise is that the inter-regional transmission infrastructure is developed to serve loads in regions, and that there will be flows into those regions, or those regions will be relying on the bulk system or the inter-regional transmission infrastructure at times when those systems are peaking. I think there is limitations to that presumption in the fact that generation makes up a big player in the flow as well, and it's not just about regional loads. But that's the premise of it. And so in this case, maybe I'm going to start flirting on evaluations here too, but in this case, in the Northwest, we've got this very large load that may be the kind of that swing to the regional peak. Well, if there's the need for transmission reinforcement to serve this region, if there's a response from that load to reduce their consumption or find ways to level it out, there would be the benefit of reduced reinforcement into the region. On the flip side, going to maybe Colette's analysis that she's done, where you look at the Northwest and if 25% of the load is actually responding to price, maybe another modification that could go into the rate design gets to, well, if we ever get to a place where there is the need to reinforce in this region, well, then maybe another rate class for maybe interruptible rate for those types of consumers who are responding would allow us to defer or avoid developing transmission. So those are signals that would be sent through the rate. Are they the most effective at achieving our objectives is for a discussion in our next session.
Yeah, and the only part I'll add to that is at the also the theory behind it or the rationale is when that region is at its peak load, the theory is that's when it's peak drawing generation across regions from other regions into that region. So to align with the planning signals and as well as to align with likely the peak draw into to serve that load.
Okay. I see, Kira, you've got your hand up. And I'm going to hear your question before we entertain it, because if you're going to try to help us bring clarity by further evaluating, then I'm going to cut it off.
Why would you assume that?
I've had a couple of conversations with you before.
Well, okay. Thanks. There are two pieces of the analysis that you're kind of sharing with us right now. One is the interregional split. And then I think the difficulty I'm trying to understand how to utilize this model for the purposes of potentially using the interregional and intra-regional cost categories and then still maintaining the same type of billing determinants, like the 12 CP models. So I think there might be some rationale, because it sounds like you swung some of the costs that are currently captured in the bulk system charge as now intra-regional by kind of identifying those, that infrastructure that actually is used for intra-regional flow. If you use the 12 CP, could I use the same model in some way to recalculate what those rates would look like if I took that interregional cost or classification and then applied the 12 CP to it?
Good question. Let's get going in the model. I got the prodding from Vittoria, and I'll show you, Akira. 2C, okay? Okay, I'm going to go back to rate calculations because I know, the Northwest, there's a lot of interesting load behavior in there, and it is the smallest region. But I'll just show you, so you don't have to keep flipping between different case studies. I can now change. Well, first of all, we've got case study one, which is a price responsive load in the Northwest. I have 2018 season year data up here for you to look at, and then 2019 season year data. So the data that I provided in the PowerPoint slide is 2019, but you can look at 2018 to really capture does the year matter? Is there behavior between years that changes things? So under this 12 CP response factor for this site, it's around 95% with that load factor of about 55%, highest meter demand of 108 megawatts. All this is drawn from down here. So this is our current ISO tariff DTS charges. I thought I could help Akira, but there's a way to just quickly add that little bit of nuance that Akira was asking for in this model about the functionalization between bulk and regional to play around that with that. But moving on, bookend A analysis is here with our $9,700 per megawatt, with approximately 150,000 billing determinants across Alberta-wide for the whole year. And we're going to try to recover about $1.466 billion. And again, snapshot in time, and that's what our estimated costs were. I'm going to zip over the purple. That's for later. Don't peak. Bookend B, a time of regional peak. We talked about $1,000 per megawatt at that 120 CP, and then $3,100 for the billing capacity. And then this following down here will calculate the bills. Here's where you can play around with your rates. So the interregional dollars, we have about $1 billion revenue requirement to be recovered, and under intra-regional around $500 million. So you could play around with these to change the rates and change the results if you wanted to modify that way. So that's what the power, like I said, don't look at the purple yet. And I said down here, rate calculations, there's estimates, they're rough. There's certainly no price, send a price signal, get a response, feed it back in flow here. We're just getting roughly what the estimates are. So that's why that minus plus minus 30% there. So we're going to go look at the graph of our price responsive load in the Northwest. And it's hard to see the little green down here at the bottom, but that's the number, the quantity of megawatts this site was charged for 12 CP. So given their fairly high load in other hours, they're able to avoid 12 CP quite well. For whatever reason, they're doing a good job of avoiding the bulk charges. The purple lines would show what their 120 CP charge would be. So this would be the summer months, and this would be the winter months. That's what's in purple. And then behind that in the blue is their hourly load profile. And then the red line is just their maximum demand. And I've used it as a proxy for contract demand or billing capacity or some sort of maximum requirement from the grid. You can clearly tell that this is a price responsive load. And especially when I start contrasting with some other sites. So I'm going to do that before, so we can get moving, because I can't believe it's already 3:20. So what you can do is let's look at case study two, because it's a little bit different and it's in the Northeast. So I'm going to change case study to two, and Northeast is equal to two. Now it's got to think for a while, so we'll let it think. And we can all see who has the fastest computer, who's getting this done way quicker than me. Okay, and then I click, I don't know, this refresh all will update the pivot tables, and then everything else will update following through. So now we're looking at another very high response factor site with a 22 megawatt maximum demand and a 2% load factor. Their bill under today's tariff is about $810,000. Under bookend A, it was up 211%. Under bookend B, 5%. So let's look at the graph. So clearly this is a standby site. They very rarely use above 5 megawatts. And again, because this is an amalgamation of sites, there's a little bit of funniness into it. But if I was to make up that the site, they probably have their generation slightly, very closely sized to their load, or maybe a little bit more. And then every once in a while, they have a requirement from the grid. So this is standby load. You can see that right away from their load factor. They avoid 12 CP just because they rarely need support from the grid.
Rhonda, I've got a quick clarification question from Akira here. And he's asking if the bulk system costs are approximately 51%. He believes, and the interregional costs are now 68%. And he's wondering if that's correct based on the cases that you've done here, I believe.
Well, I get 51% of total revenue requirement. It was in that one slide I presented from the 2020 ISO tariff update. Has to go back to the PowerPoint, and if you calculate it at 60%, that's, you know, concept. We don't have the numbers nailed down. I didn't calculate it, Kira, so thanks.
And another question as well from Dan. He's asking if the tool allows for all five case studies to be modeled in each of the different regions at all. Can you clarify?
Yeah, absolutely. You can change this region to whatever region you want to test it under. You could use the case study to see what the impact would be across the six different regions as well. I won't do that just because it takes a while to update. But yeah, for sure.
Excellent.
Okay, I'm going to go to case study three again in the Northwest. I wonder what's using more my CPU power, Zoom or Excel. Okay, this is another price responsive load. There's quite a difference between 2018 and 2019. Same kind of maximum demand, fairly close load factor. So it's kind of interesting. Maybe 2018, there's some hours not expected or some behavior modification they couldn't, weren't able to do. Or maybe in 2019, they really tried to avoid 12CP, could be the result. So I'm going to show 2019 in the graph. And you can see a lot of, I mean, a variability in the load. And you can barely see any green down here, a little bit here, a little bit over here, where they would have picked up some 12CP charges in 2019 versus their bookend B, 120CP would be significantly higher. And of course, if they're responding to 12CP and watching the system peak and have tools to predict and avoid it, but don't have those tools, then this is an expected result and could change if customers had the right, had some more tools to be able to do the same job forecasting regional peak. So in this case, there's a 86% increase on bookend A and 127% increase on bookend B. And I'm going to go to case study 4 in the central region.
And as you're loading here, LaRonda, there's a question from Christine Runge asking if it was a different file that was uploaded, and it seems like she's having some Excel breaking results in the summary tables when she's trying to use the tool, and wondering if others are getting the same issue. I don't presume it's a different file. I think it's the one that you're in, but.
Yeah, the only thing would be if I have links. I don't think I do, but that's terrible if that's true. We're just getting it tested right now by someone at the ISO that downloaded it. So we'll see. That's why there's version 1.0. Okay.
It's everyone on this call that's doing the testing for you. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Nudge the dog. Okay, so our case study number 4 is a DFO, a distribution facility owner substation with distributed connected generation. In the Central East, they're fairly high on the response factor, not very high megawatts, and very low load factor. So if I go to the graph, it's all over the place. And there's definitely change in behavior in the last little bit. So that kind of throws off our summary results. But it looks more like a standby load from my perspective. They've avoided 12CP a lot. And then starting towards the end of the year, they're starting to pick up some 12CP charges. And again, their bill are impacted under bookend A, where they would bill based on this number up here. It'd be very similar to our case study 2 and very a rate reduction under bookend B. And then I'm going to go to our last case study, 5 in the Edmonton region, which is 4. Oh, daydreaming. Okay. So you can see by the green excursions up that this site consistently, there may be some time here where, I'll double check on that one. There's green, pretty high 12CP charges under bookend B. Like when we go to our rate calculations, we can see under both bookend A and B, there's a rate drop or a bill impact drop. And that's likely because of the rate, the $10,000 a megawatt that they're paying versus the $1,000 and and just their load behavior at 120 CP. Okay, so this is, there's still more in this file, but what I'm going to do is go back to PowerPoint and walk you through the next set of our agenda today. I'll just double check and, okay, so everyone else seems to have no problem. So I'll talk to Christine afterwards. She's still having trouble. So Raj says, do you expect many customers to reduce contract capacity? That could be part of the concept of a fixed or bill or book and day type where we're moving to more fixed, that you would look at revising contract values in order to align with the new rate design. And that would, if megawatts drop, rates go up. Okay, so I'm gonna stop. Okay, we're back to where we were, right? Okay. So where we left off on the 24th was a list of potential modifications or levers.
Before you go into it, Laronda, Akira, I know you had your question beforehand that Laronda was suggesting that she'd answer. Did you feel that you got your question answered during the review of the tool? Brilliant. All right, over to you, Laronda.
Okay, so on, like I was saying, we kind of brainstormed some bullet points, and that's why the last one says others. We know there's other modifications or levers we can do to achieve a better balance of our objectives. And so that's what the next section of today's session is going to be. And I think it's should be, I hope, interesting and helpful. So one of the, or... when we first look at the top two bullets, and we spent a lot of time talking today about why region peak, why not system peak, what would the impacts be, especially on these sites in the Northwest in such a small region load. So let's go investigate that a little bit. How I'm going to do that is illustrate a modification. And also I'm going to show for the next bullet point, what about a modification that is a DOS term or a modified DOS term or a standby rate or an interruptible rate? If we do a modification on bookend A with this, what happens? Do we get a better balance of our objectives? Is a trade-off, if there's value in the trade-off? And so we're kind of going to walk you through these illustrative examples of modifications so that we all can have a joint understanding of the value of modifications or how to assess them fully across the five objectives and get to a really good solid conversation coming up on October 22nd and further on as we get towards a final tariff design. So we already presented this slide. Just as I came back from the spreadsheet, this was the slide, but now we've added below in purple some illustrative examples of some modifications. So on bookend A, we've added a modification that includes an interoperable rate. Now, not all the sites, the case studies here, would it be applicable to. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. And you can see that from case study 1 and 3 is where I'm really going to highlight the impact of something like a standby rate. And this is really high level analysis and could benefit from stakeholder input for sure. Or stakeholders coming to us and presenting their tariff design / modifications on October 22nd. So case study 1 goes from 132% to a 28% increase. Case study 3 goes from 86% to a 3% increase under bookend A with a modification. That there's give and take everywhere. So as the bill impact is reduced on these sites, rates go up. And that's why, for example, case study five has a less of a drop from 19% reduction to 13% reduction. And so again, with case study two and four, you see increases as well. Now for bookend B, the modification that we are illustrating to see how it works is, instead of at region peak, why not at system peak? What impact does it have? Especially, let's just focus on our case studies for now, but we can see on case studies on, let's look at case study one and three again. We see a change from plus 161% down to 45% and 127% to 85%. I'll walk you through our evaluation of the objectives with these type of modifications, but I think really we have to remember that these sites are already responding to a system peak signal. So not changing that should not result in as big a change as that regional peak, because they're not responding to it. Our historical data, they haven't had to, they're not responding. But there is some consistency in responding to 120 system CP signal. So I'm going to, and these are, again, it's under the stamp of the interoperable rate under bookend A, very high level. You can play around and assess. You can change some of the design I've put in there for rough to just kind of finalize what you're thinking. And so I'm going to go back over to Excel now to show you how the tool can help you with that. So all those portions of the tool that I said don't look at now, we're going to talk about now. Okay, I'm going to go back to case study one. So if we go down here, bookend A with interoperable rate class. That's not what I'm expecting. Let me hit this again. Oh, great. Everything was going so good. Okay. Oh, I know what I did. It's perfectly expected. I did that on purpose. So you guys will remember what to do. So bookend A modified with an additional interoperable rate class. So I'm going to just use some terms that make sense to me. You have firm, there's an amount of capacity from the grid that you really rely on. You know, the coldest day of the year, something happens to your generation, or you need to keep something running, you need firm. So what is the percentage of your total demand that you need as firm? Rather than putting in megawatts, I put in a percentage, because otherwise, I'm changing this constantly for every site. But you can the amount of firm may be elected or depending on a few conditions and applicability. But just for this test, I just put in 40% of the contract capacity would be firm. And that creates an amount of megawatts that needs to be collected from firm. And the same amount, the full $1.5-ish billion still needs to be collected. So the rates will adjust. And it's around $10,400 for firm. And I'm just testing some things to see what can be done. $2,000 a megawatt for the interoperable service. Once we do that, or throw your own numbers in there, now I should see what I'm expecting over here. So I've moved this site's bookend A bill from $12 million to $6.9 million, still a 28% increase, just a high level. And if you go to the graph, what we're saying is there's some level, and let's say 40% is about 40 megawatts of this is firm. If it's 20%, you'll see, we can go do that too. Oop. We get a rate drop. So this is just based on my little high numbers, and any interruptible rate class will come with some further understanding of what the charge would be for a firm. But I'm going to put it back to 40%. So that's the bookend A modifier that I have included here to give structure to stakeholders here today to look at tariff design in a way that can do a better job than our bookend A and B of achieving our objectives. So I'm going to zip down to the right, bookend B at time of regional peak. Now we have bookend B at time of system peak. So the dollars are fairly close when you look at time. So when we looked at time of regional peak, we had a billing determinants of about just over a million, and now we have 995,000 because we're system megawatts added up will be less than the regional peaks added up because they're at different hours, all different hours, but we still recover our $1.5 billion. So this is megawatts at time of system peak, summer and winter weekday. And if I go over here, from bookend B, adding that modification at time of region peak is now from 161% to 45%. Setting aside the issues that Surendra and Colette were talking about at the time of region peak, we can clearly see customers are responding. This customer is responding to the 12 CP signal. So looking at a time of system peak, you would expect that the lining up of the hours would be a little bit better than at time of regional peak. So this is an expected response. The other one I just added here, and this is not shown anywhere else, but and you can also see it in our workhorse hourly data. We've added just instead of a weekday, it's a weekly peak, but it just to show you how you can use this file to look at the number of hours of coincidence or look at them differently to assess a tariff design and whether we can, what the impact is on various customers, case studies, your site, et cetera.
Okay, anything else you're wanting to walk through, Laronda?
So like Akira's point would be, can you do the 12 CP here as a modification, like keep the same, almost all this the same, but change the dollars. So this rate would change between bulk and regional based on some other split or some, you know, assessment of what those categories, the functionalization would be. And you could, we could add that. It's just simply basically what we have over to the right. So that's something easy to add. Grab those cells and copy them to the right and play around with your rates here to make sure you recover the $1.5 billion. I don't know if that helps, Kira, because I get an inkling of a tariff design coming. So what I'm going to do now is, okay, any questions on the model? Because I'm going to leave it and not come back to it maybe, unless there's more questions.
And maybe to add some flavor, some context for it. The way that you entered and prefaced this, Nicole, is this should be a tool to help you to understand how does this impact me? What are the different ways that the rate designs can impact me and my invoice, my bill, and to be able to give you some flexibility to play with the tools. Has that objective been achieved? So if you're the the Miller Thompsons or the CNRLs or the Enbridges or the TC Energy and any other consumer group that's on the phone, or consumer, I should say. Does this help you? Does this give you some information and a tool in your pocket to be able to understand how this might impact you? I see Jeff. Let's get, oh, is that Fat Fingers, Jeff? Surendra, and then we'll come back to Jeff.
Good. Yeah. Thanks, Jordan. No, yes, it does make the things clear, but more worries. More it bring the worries, because what we thought could be, this is worse than that. Right? It's clear like how bad it could get. So that's good part, because we know that. But I have two kind of simple questions, Laronda. If you can, you said that three summer, three winter, and I wonder why, and I do not answer now. June month is much, much, much lighter month than November month. Why we have to go three and three if we are winter peaking province, have more month in the winter? And this first, and the second one, I think the only hope to me on this design is this interruptible that could work. And I'm still very also on interruptible too. So, you know, interruptible, you have any idea what percent of the time you could use that option? I mean, it's like a 5% time you're going to be asking the going to the firm load, or 10% of the time, or 2% of the time? Because that will make us to see how many time will we be asked to go down.
Yeah, that's true. It depends on the region as well. If there's value in their interruptible to avoid future transmission facilities costs. Yeah, like, I mean, there's that line where, let's say the interruption gets to be, you value your capacity more than the interruptions, and then we build system, and then those system costs are carried by all ratepayers. So there's that sort of flip point where it becomes not economical for you to continue with an interruptible service.
And it feels like we're getting into more of the specifics of design at that point for it too. I'd flip the script, Surinder. I'd say,
Jordan, I don't agree with that here, because that's the key thing to us to assess what it looked like for us, right? And unless we have some idea, if we're going to ask 90% time interrupted, then absolutely this is not an option. It's a 2%. Okay. So I think we might not have the idea now, but I also need to have some idea in other jurisdiction how often this interruptible being used, right? That's a key feature of this thing. It doesn't have to be like that number, but some range, because that's how that the site like our it will evaluate the impact of this design to our cost.
And
right, so, I think we're getting into the evaluation pretty quickly, because then the other side of it is that if it's there's no value to you to be interrupted that many times, or that like 90%, and that it, where's the value to the load that's paying more to allow a firm interruptible service?
We'll interject at this point. Maybe, Surinder, what I'd also say too is related to the ranges that you're asking for as well. You have the tool now, you can play with it and have some of those conversations to have a point of view on what the acceptable range would be too. So that can be power for you when you're thinking about evaluating and providing some input at some of the subsequent conversations. Let's get Jeff and then Colette, and then we've got a couple questions from the Q&A.
Perfect. Thanks, Jordan. Laronda, this is an amazing spreadsheet. Thank you for doing this. This is exactly the kind of analysis that I think helps people to understand the impacts and do kind of the quantitative assessment. So that's exactly where we're hoping to go. More to the point, I think there's enough here to keep a cure off the streets for a couple of hours at least. So that's good. What I think we're missing and what I hope people will do between now and the next session is first of all, understand whether or not we've met a goal here. And I've got to admit, I don't really understand the goal. If it's to help customers who can't avoid coincident peaks, and I do the rough math on case five, which is, let's just call them residential customers. A residential customer uses about a kilowatt of demand. So it represents about 45,000 residential customers, if it was pure residential. And your biggest savings, which was bookend A, saves them about $1.3 million a year. So 1.3 over 45,000 customers is $29 a year. That's a Tim Hortons coffee. That's all we're talking about. And by comparison, some of the larger customers are now getting impacted to the tune of millions a year, which I know is Victoria's comment the other day. So, you know, what I want people to do as they play with a tool, or my suggestion is, you know, make sure that you're actually creating the impact that you want on the individual types of customers. And then once you do that, give some substantial thought to how the individual customer is then going to respond, because the price responsive industrial customer in case one is just going to defect from the grid. They've already got their own generation. You're trying to assess another $10 million a year against them. They're done and they're gone. And so I think we have to be very, you know, if what we're doing is buying residential customers in Alberta a coffee, we need to decide whether that's worth driving mass exodus from the grid. So I guess that's my challenge and what I want people to give some thought to between now and the next session.
I do want to just make a couple, quick comments, Jordan, before we go to the next. And so there's, I guess I would say two spectrums of time that we're focusing on right now. There's this kind of this tool and the discussion that you just had, Jeff, is really about, well, how do we manage the transition from where we are now to what a future rate structure could be like? And by no means, and I think hopefully we've said this enough, the intent is not to create that dramatic cost impact for people that are responding to the rate signal now in a way that's going to have longer detrimental effects to the entire system of having parties leave. And that's really into, well, kind of our discussion around, well, how modifications and mitigation to the bookends that we laid out. But what are we trying to get to in that longer term is recognizing that the infrastructure has been developed in the province. There is a robust transmission system and we want it to be utilized and cost recovered in a way that incents it to be used. And so the rate design that we're seeking is trying to get to that without causing too much of a disruption right now. And this tool shows us that, well, there are some pretty largely impacted people. We want to start talking, and Lorinda will probably take us there once we leave the Excel tool and go back to the PowerPoint, is how do we move from these bookends and start talking about modifications that will still achieve our rate objectives, but has a smaller or less detrimental impact for the pool of customers that are dramatically impacted by the bookends right now.
Okay. So let's go to Colette and then Paula.
Hi, I just might want to follow up a little bit on Jeff's comments. The analysis I did had, you know, for the four interruptible loads that are the energy intensive trade exposed industries that electricity represents 60 to 70% of their operating costs, they're looking at a $20 million increase, over 100% for bookend B. And that puts them out of business. So I don't see how like a modification that transitions in over time puts them in a situation where they run to failure. Unless you have a load retention rate, because I don't see how an interruptible tariff actually works in this scenario when they're in the Northwest and they're setting the peak all the time. Unless you're willing to create a special tariff for these types of customers to keep them in Alberta, this is going to fail. And it has to be, it can't be a transition. It has to be a permanent thing because they will just, if it's, you know, in 5 years or 10 years, you want to get to them to this point, then they're going to stop investing in their sites. They're just going to run to failure and they'll close down at that time. So, I mean, you really have to understand the seriousness of the proposals here and the impact they're going to have on these companies, because from where they're sitting right now, they just don't see a future the way things are.
Okay. So hear you loud and clear, Colette. And definitely, mm-hmm. I think that's more of a conversation that we need to dig into a lot more. It can't be, we're definitely truncating it today because it's a little bit outside of the scope. Like if I was to reference it or to put it back as a challenge for it, what does it take or what does it look like to come forward with the design and modifications that is amenable to these parties and these stakeholders for it? So I think that'd be the challenge back for prep for the 22nd for. Is that a reason?
Well, and if you can still hear me, so that kind of leads to my next comment. I mean, there's lots of information that's been provided here today. I have no idea how we're going to pull together a presentation on rate alternatives that are well thought out, kind of examine consequences by Friday to have them to the ISO. I just don't think that's a realistic expectation. The only thing that we can do from this perspective that we have today is just to say why these things don't work. So I don't know. I guess I would recommend that the ISO offer more time for us to process this information and think through what some rate modifications could actually be that could work. So I guess that's a request. Thanks.
Okay. I don't have an answer for you right now, but I can tell you that we'll take that away and get back to people relatively quickly with what that response would be. I see Paula, your hand's up. So let's get your hand up, your questions that are also typed into the Q&A. And Richard, you're fully into design. So we're going to push your question. We're going to dismiss that one and talk about that at a later date. So let's get Paula unmuted.
Thank you very much. And Lorana, thanks for going through that really slowly. I really appreciate it. I guess I have some fundamental questions that line up with Jeff and Colette, is that if we're designing a system so that people try not to use the coincident peak and drives everybody off, I feel like we're chasing our tail, that we're trying to get people to pay but not use the system but pay. And so, I mean, this is great for energy storage. It's great for people not using the system. And I feel like we're paying for sins of the past where we've installed transmission that maybe isn't the best fit for where we go in the future. And I'm just wondering, where does this drive? Because as soon as people operate to essentially to win the game of let's try to lower my network costs, let's try to lower my total bulk and regional costs, it really means that they're using the transmission less. And now there's fewer and fewer people to still pay that big, huge cost for a system that was really designed originally on the critical transmission infrastructure for a lot of coal power distribution. So how do we win at this game? And I'm just wondering, are we chasing our tail here? Are we going in circles? Because you had a system designed to recoup the costs and everybody invested the right way and they tried to save their bulk and regional tariff costs and they did all the right things. And now we're saying, okay, now everybody's defecting from the grid. So now we got to redistribute it. But don't we just end up where we are today? And I'm just like, I totally get what you're doing, but it feels like we're not going to get there with this because it'll just shift people's behaviors and then people will avoid this payment because it's a huge payment, and we'll get behaviors that maybe economically for Alberta are disadvantageous. Where do we end up at the end of the day? Sorry, those are deep questions.
Well, it's deep, and I'm going to cut it off. We're not. That's not the purpose or the intention of what we're trying to discuss today. It's absolutely a great conversation to be having, and you can tell that people are really eager to get there. So I think the 20 seconds is going to be a good conversation. Any other specific questions, discussion about the tool, how you could use this, how you can arm yourself with this information to either develop proposals or understand the rate impact on you today?
So just one key question. So I'm supposed to present on the 22nd. I totally echo Colette's comments. I'm grasping this at the moment, but for Kenria to put forward something that their members are okay with that goes to the ISO by the, like, we just can't meet that timing. I'm with Colette there. That I don't want to waste anybody's time by presenting something that's not sort of vetted by members or robust, or just poking at little sides of this. I think it's fair. And the questions you've asked are really quite fair with regard to the proposals, but the timing is just too short. So I'm with Colette on that. I think the 22nd would be way too soon for this to really give it the service. You guys have been working on this for a while, so we need a bit more time than, like, what is it, a week? Yeah. Can't do it. Yeah.
I'm seeing Richard Stout also commenting that he's struggling with the timing as well. So we'll absolutely take that under advisement. Commit to getting an answer back to folks relatively quickly here. Any other questions, how you can use this information to arm you understand the impact for you? Erica. Should be able to unmute on your end now, Erica.
Okay, hopefully I did that appropriately.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Great. So I just really want to double check something, and I think the answer is the model, the way that you built it, is working. But if we just go to the rate calculations tab, LaRonda, cells D41 and D51, yeah, perfect, do nothing. So these are, my understanding is this is coincident peak demand. For a month, or is that for a year?
For a year.
Okay. So this one isn't multiplied by 12. And then when we look at some of the other equations, they are multiplied by 12. And like if I was to go to AV 41, it's a much larger number, but it's still at the time of system peak. So it would still be over the same hours, or is it now over 120 hours versus 12?
Sorry, what cell did you say?
I jumped all the way to AB, column AB 41.
Yeah, it's, so if you look at the pivot, it's the sum of system 120 CP.
Yeah.
So what it's pulling for this workhouse is it sums by year every single value that's above zero. I mean, it's adding the zeros, of course, but they have no impact on the sum, but it doesn't need to multiply by 12. Okay. Is what I'm trying to say.
So bookend B is another way to say that is bookend B is 120 hours and current is 12 hours.
Right.
Gotcha. Hey, perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to run over back to the PowerPoint slide, because I want to go through our last two, three slides. Okay, can you see
PowerPoint? Yes, I can.
I'm so scared of doing this wrong. Flipping between the two has not been fun. So again, at the end of September 24th, we kind of walked through an example evaluation of a modification, and that modification was more or less hours of coincidence peak. And instead, what I'm going to do is walk through each of the modifications
that I kind of illustrated here today. So the first one is the modified DOS term or an interruptible. And so we add an interruptible rate around 10,800 megawatts annually are interruptible or non-firm is sort of the hypotheses of this whole modification. And if you look under impact to the left of the arrows, it's green, green, red, green, red. That was where we left off bookend A. So now with the modifications, have we done anything to improve it? This is ISO assessment. I get that it would be a spectrum of thoughts on the assessment here, but I'll just walk through it to maybe it would help you at the point of presenting or evaluating other tariff design options. So in moving to a modified DOS term or slash interruptible, we don't see it changing the evaluation of cost responsibility, that it's to reflect that some customers value their service from the grid differently than other customers. They have an aspect to their load that is firm and an aspect of their load profile that is interruptible, that they can change their operations or run their generation at times when the system's constrained and they should get the value for that. So we feel the cost responsibility remains as green. Again, and with efficient price signals, feel that it is efficient to allow that broader rate classes to communicate to the ISO, here's how to plan for me. You don't have to plan for a firm 100 megawatts for me. I plan for 40 megawatts. If there's additional capacity in the system, I would like to optimize that and use that for an interruptible rate. For minimal disruption, and that's kind of been our whole conversation today, has it had any impact? And Colette and Surinder had comments as well on that. But we can see that we're moving closer towards a lower impact on those heavy 12CP responders for some of them, especially the price responsive load sites, when we add a rate class. So it's not complete, but are we moving in the right direction? As far as simplicity, we don't think it adds any complexity. It remains very simple for bookend A. We already have a DOS term rate. The billing systems are set up for it. Innovation and flexibility, we think it does move from red for not achieving the objectives to partially achieving the objectives, that it allows customers to make how do they need the grid and be able to price a product or include a product that reflects their use of the grid. So we're on the right track on innovation and flexibility by adding additional rate class that may reflect more value. Okay, there's questions, but I can talk with them afterwards. Now I'm going to go to, I think because we're starting to really dip our toes into evaluation here, it's not, you know, is our assessment, do you agree with assessment? It's trying to just walk through the exercise of the evaluation. So for the bookend B modification, where we move from a 20 CP at time of region peak to at time of system peak, a bookend B from the ISO had an evaluation of it being green, green, red, yellow, yellow. So have we done anything to move to some, you know, more of a achieving the objectives realm? You see no change in the cost responsibility at time of system peak. If we're efficient price signals, maybe we're going a little bit away as regional stress may better align with planning signals and lead to reduction of any future costs that may be required in the region. For minimal disruption, we're getting closer alignment with the current state of 12CP, which should, in theory, minimize the disruption to sites that are currently heavy 12CP responders. Simplicity, I do think we are even more green, moving away from six regions, all the information required, the level of understanding of where you're located and the complexity of understanding the different regions and how their peaks are driven, that we achieve a better objective under simplicity by moving to a system peak, and innovation and flexibility that it sends them a little bit more powerful signal that it's one timing signal rather than six. it's got complexity with the six that may not, like this one is a little bit of a trying to do a high level assessment here of what innovation and flexibility means between one price, you know, signal versus six price signals throughout the province. So this is just another, we did the example on September 24th. Now we've provided some real modifications with some meat behind them, some assessment behind them. Are we moving closer to a tariff design objective balance or trade-off that meets the objectives that we've been looking at and reviewing and trying to achieve for a number of years now?
Nicole, do you want to chime in here as well?
Yeah, I think I just add that, and we're presenting these, there's the slide 35 that shows the list of modifications that we presented at September 24th as kind of ideas, and we're presenting these here as, again, as examples of modifications that can be made from the bookends that maybe from certain stakeholders' views will get us to a better balance of what we're trying to achieve across the five objectives, and then again, provided the tool that's been provided to potentially model those modifications and others as you see fit to understand what the implications are to you. And then we'll be looking at them from the sense of, well, what's the implications to the overall system or overall demand?
Okay, thank you. I see a couple of questions come in. And so let's start with Robert Stewart's question. Can you easily add to the hourly data set? And if so, historical pool price import export ACT and generation mix would be useful. Can you respond to that, Lauren?
Yeah, we can obviously easily add hourly values. I think we're getting in pretty fancy tariff design world, and the tool wasn't meant to do that. It's fairly simplistic. So yeah, you could easily add some of these. It'd be interesting to see how it flows into a tariff design and impact.
I think I would premise that those, we don't intend to add those. I think that information, the historical pool price import export ATC is available on our webpage. Generation mix might get a little bit more difficult, but if you want to add those to the tool, go for it, Robert. That's not where we're going to be focusing in the next couple weeks.
And to that end, I saw previously Horst had a question about if the ISO is going to entertain adding to the backlog and tool refinement types of questions. Do you care to respond to that?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Horst, I was adding an acronym description but put it in the wrong answer. So I think you can send them to us and we'll see, make that assessment if we think there's going to be kind of value for the whole group. Maybe that's something we'll entertain or investigate, but we also have kind of we want to keep it narrow and limited to what we've provided this for.
Okay, and Peter's got a question here about interrupter rule rate classes and whether those definitions are provided and outlined in the PowerPoint, or maybe we can just give a quick definition of them right now as well.
Well, they're as described in like I kind of laid out, it's a 40% sort of assessment of an interruptible. You know what, we could provide detail in the spreadsheet in version 1.1 to kind of explain, but it is not a definition of an interruptible rate class. We haven't put applicability on there. We haven't said how you determine the firm. It's sort of just, you know, testing whether you could introduce this concept and have an impact. So that would be further work as we move through October 22nd over to our December 2nd session, as we get closer and closer to a final tariff design, what the structure would actually look like.
Okay. Your cost per region question, Paul, we're going to dismiss that and host that at a later time. Where would energy storage be described in your bookends with modifications? Would it be modified DOS term or interruptible? Do you care to clarify on that point, though, Lorena?
Not at this time. I mean, we can think about it, and there's, of course, a lot of work going on, but I don't want to.
I would add that we presented three options at the September 24th session, and all three of those options could be applied to bookend A or bookend B, and not, the third option was an interruptible rate, which could be applied to A or B.
Any other questions from the forum today? Just a thanks from Paula. Akira has got your hand up. Let's get Akira unmuted.
Just a quick question. I was wondering, just the bookends didn't incorporate anything with an energy charge in it. Is there any real reason, or is that like you just don't like having kind of energy flow being what's attracting transmission costs, or just trying to understand the philosophy and whether that's like a no-fly zone?
Well, could kick it over to Spencer. Would you like to add something, Spencer?
Sure. Yeah, I think in looking at it, I mean, it's a good question and it's a fair point if it's something that you'd like to add. I think in our view, the energy charge per megawatt hour type of concept would be, you know, really not achieving the objectives we talked about. So whether it's efficient price signals and aligning those to how the transmission system is planned and built, you know, an ongoing energy charge, you know, we talked about 12 CP in April. You know, having an energy charge in every single hour would have similar kind of effects of distorting people's consumption decisions at those times. So I wouldn't say it's something, you know, that's a no-fly zone. I wouldn't put it quite so strongly, but, you know, we've looked at kind of the most appropriate or most effective rate designs in that sense. But it's certainly an area you could recommend.
Okay, any other questions? All right, I think the big action that was heard or requested partway through is understanding if there's more prep time that could be made for the October 22nd session or pushing back that altogether. So I, on behalf of the ISO, I think we'll come back and take the action to get back with an answer for parties on what that looks like as quickly as possible for it. Outside of that, Nicole, around anything you want to say in closing?
Well, I think we've thrown a fairly big model. I mean, Eric had some questions about clarity. I'm sure you will still have them. Send them my way about the model. If you find any errors, let's get them fixed in better ways to modeling. I can't guarantee I can get back to you right away, but we'll definitely consolidate the comments on the tool and see what we can do. Expanding its scope, maybe not, but perfecting it and making it working a little better, sure.
Yeah, and I would just add that we really, LaRonda did all the heavy lifting, but I'm here for support, really are hoping to be able to get you the information, the tools and the data that you need to understand the implications kind of at a customer level and then also at a system level to so that we're going forward together with kind of a shared set of information and understanding to redesign rates for Alberta. So that's all I would add.
Brilliant. Thank you everyone for attending it today. We will adjourn here.
Jordan, can we just, we'll run the poll.
Sure.
If you want to just do that.
So please, on your way out the door, please vote in this poll. Give us good feedback and information on how we can make these better.
And then Jordan, just to remind people that, well, and I guess it depends on our timing, so.
Yeah, we'll have to get back to everyone by Friday or before Friday, as soon as possible, around the timing for the next session.
Yeah, perfect. All right, I will end the polling. All right, thanks.
All right, everyone, thank you for your time. We'll adjourn here. Look forward to talking to everyone in the future sessions. Bye for now.